Thank you for joining us. This is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. If you are the generous sort, you can be like Ben, Tyler, Janet, Robin, and John, who all support the podcast on Patreon. Through Patreon, you're able to support the show with either a recurring or one-time donation. This helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase the Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store if you feel inclined. So check it out. We have two guests today, Jacob Atchley and Dawson Hicks. Both Jacob and Dawson are currently undergraduate students at Arkansas Tech University, majoring in fisheries and wildlife sciences with a focus in fisheries. They both help one of their professors and fellow podcast hosts, Dr. Sue Colvin, with various projects around campus, and will be tag teaming a weekly spot as hosts on the Fisheries Podcast going forward. Welcome to the podcast, Jacob and Dawson.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Looking forward to it.
So Arkansas Tech University isn't a university I'm exactly familiar with. What drew both of you to Arkansas Tech University?
I honestly said I would never come to Arkansas Tech University. It was the one school in the state that I always said I wouldn't come to. And I came up here to tour and fell in love with the department and some of the professors that were here at that point. Since then, a couple of them have retired, but I think that our department's grown and it's pretty great now.
So as for me, I actually grew up pretty close to here, relatively speaking. Only live a little under an hour and a half away from campus, so it was obviously really convenient for me with that regard. My sister actually had gone to Arkansas Tech prior to me attending, so I already had a bit of a vague idea of what to expect going into it just from hearing from her experience. Not to mention, I just loved the idea of going into a career in fisheries, since fishing and just being around the water in general are some of my favorite activities and have been my entire life. So all things considered, it was really a no-brainer choosing ATU, at least for me.
I guess, where is Arkansas Tech located?
It's in not necessarily the northwest part of the state, more towards the western side of the state. It's in Russellville. It's along, actually campus is, I'd say, a half a mile from Lake Dardanelle or the Arkansas River. So.
And by the way, Lake Dardanelle is a dammed up section of the Arkansas River, just in case anyone's unfamiliar.
Here in Kansas, it's called the Arkansas River. So.
All right.
But we won't give you any grief about that. So both of you are kind of in the, I guess, Dawson, are you also going to be a senior at Arkansas Tech?
Yes, I am actually a senior now, going into my third semester as a senior. I was a transfer student, so I kind of got into this major relatively late. I didn't start the program until I was a junior. So if I would have joined in earlier, I probably could have graduated back in the spring. But now it's probably going to be next spring. I'm hoping for next spring.
So both of you are beginning or in the middle of your senior year at Arkansas Tech. What has been the favorite class you've taken so far, I guess, or was the class you're most looking forward to in the coming semester?
It is undoubtedly ichthyology. I have been obsessed with fish my entire life, and I didn't realize how much I didn't know about fish until I actually took that class. And our professor, Dr. Charles Gagan, who's now retired, he was phenomenal. I learned so much about fish, more than I ever thought I needed to know about fish and fish identification and natural history and everything. And I just got such a greater appreciation after having taken that class for all things fish.
I would have to say that that was my favorite class that we've taken too. The taxonomy side of it was a little challenging at times. It was enjoyable. However, I am looking forward to this semester. I have human dimensions with Dr. Colvin, and I like the people aspect of fisheries. I know a lot of people don't, so I'm really excited about that class, and it could easily take that spot for me, I think.
Yeah, I actually took it with Dr. Colvin last year, and it was pretty great. It's a whole lot of discussion, and I personally love that aspect of it as well. And like you were saying about ichthyology, there definitely is a taxonomy aspect of it that a lot of students struggle with. What I've found is typically you have students that really excel in the ecological aspect of our field with the big picture kind of things. And you also have students who excel in the taxonomy kind of stuff like zoology and whatnot. And basically ichthyology is essentially just a subset of zoology. And
I personally excel in the taxonomy side of things. I love fish identification and going out in the field and catching all kinds of little fish and seeing what I can make of them and see if I can identify them. It's a really fun hobby for me. And that's probably my favorite part of fisheries is the taxonomy side and identification.
Well, Dawson, that probably helps out in some of your side projects there on campus. In between classes or in between semesters, you've been helping out, Sue, with some research projects or helping bolster the fish collection there on campus. Could you go into a little bit more detail about some of the stuff you've been working on?
Yeah, so one of the things that I do is make sure that our specimens stay in good shape, for one thing. So most of our specimens are preserved in a solution that is 70% ethanol and 30% water. The problem is that ethanol evaporates really readily. So if you have students that are maybe looking through the collection and opening jars and looking at the fish, they may not screw a lid on tightly on one of the specimen jars. And what that can lead to is the jars evaporating ethanol out and the specimens losing ethanol over time. So often I'll go through and top off these jars with ethanol if they need them and make sure the lids are tight. The other thing about our collection is that there are thousands and thousands of specimens covering a great multitude of species. And the taxonomic status for these fishes may change over time. For some, it's several times. Sometimes we learn new things about a fish that may make us reconsider its taxonomic status, and we may want to promote it to from a subspecies to a species, for instance, or maybe move it to another genus. So one of the things I've been interested as of late is going through these old specimens that at the time of being collected may have been called something different than what they're called today. That way, whenever we digitize our collection, which we're planning on doing sometime in the near future, we'll have the names for those specimens up to date. So that's the gist of what I've been doing with the collection.
Have you found any that have just been maybe mislabeled and nobody's caught it until now? Or have they all been pretty good?
Yeah, definitely. Some specimens are collected by students whose ID skills may be limited to a single semester of ichthyology, and oftentimes that's the case. Therefore, more obscure species may get misidentified as more common species that look quite similar. This is especially the case with fish like darters and minnows, which have a lot of diversity, as well as many allopatric species that closely resemble one another. And misidentification is an error that even some seasoned veterans in our field can definitely make. But luckily, these errors, at least in my experience working with the collection, are pretty few and far between as far as I can tell. And I at least haven't found any thing where it's a moment where I thought, like, how on earth could they have possibly got this one wrong? There's no glaring issues or anything like that. But misidentification is definitely inevitable, but most of the time it's pretty inconsequential to the collection.
So it's mostly been sitting inside looking at jars of fish and not going out. And have you been able to go out and collect some new specimens at all?
I'm glad you brought that up, because as far as the field stuff goes, we haven't got to do a whole lot of it just yet. But this coming Tuesday, we're recording this on Friday, by the way. So this coming Tuesday, we are going out on our first real expedition up to the northwest corner of the state to work on a project that Sue has spent the past several months working and collaborating with others and putting together. It's a really interesting project, I think. Another one of our fish and wildlife undergrad students, her name's Alyssa Mostrom. She's a really good friend of mine. She wanted to do an undergrad study, so her and Sue decided to study the effect that anthropogenic crossings might have on things like fish assemblage and species richness in headwater streams.
In some parts of the world, those anthropogenic crossings are mostly culverts and that sort of thing, but at least I'm assuming in northwest Arkansas, it's a lot of low river crossings and kind of just concrete ledges going across these creeks that make little waterfalls that these fish can't get over. Is that what you're dealing with down there?
Yes, absolutely. Most of the time, it's going to be those low water bridges, and there are some culverts as well. And some of them are low water bridges with culverts in them. And that's usually what makes up most of our crossings here.
And how are we going to be assessing the impacts of those low water crossings on fish communities?
So we assess all of our crossings with this protocol called the Southeastern Aquatic Resources Partnership Culvert Assessment, or SARP for short. And it's a really detailed checklist that we use to determine what type of crossing we're dealing with. So things like culvert length and width, as well as many other parameters. And then after assessing the crossing, we plan on assessing the habitat and all of its parameters. So things like bank angle of the stream and substrate, flow and discharge, as well as things like vegetation. And vegetation is especially important because the least darter, which is a species that we are expecting to be working with pretty often, is one that is that's extremely rare in Arkansas. It only occurs in a very small area in the northwest corner of the state, and it's been known to be associated with certain plant species. So all of those aforementioned parameters we can use alongside the data that we get from sampling the area, e.g. the fish that we catch, to determine how barriers may be related to fish assemblage and species richness and so on and so forth. So, for example, we can use this data to examine how a fish metric like catch per unit effort can be related to a land use variable like a crossing or a culvert.
All right. And then, Jacob, you're hoping to start on some research this coming semester. What are you hoping to work on there at Arkansas Tech?
Well, we are in the planning stages of a acoustic telemetry project that we're still trying to work out some logistics on. The plan was to tag buffalo in within Pool 9 and Lake Dardanelle. And Pool 9 is the pool that's below Lake Dardanelle, to determine that if the connectivity of the two with them being dammed has an impact on their spawning habitats. And with buffalo right now, it's a big up-and-coming species because a lot of people are realizing that the populations are aging quickly. Like, I read one paper, and I don't remember who it's by, but it stated that 70% of a population of buffalo that was sampled was like 60 years or older. And the year classes that are below that are not very good. And so we're going to try to see if we can get that project going. It's a very large project, so still working out the logistics on it. And Dr. Colvin actually brought another project to my attention this week of working with Arkansas Game and Fish, possibly, on a krill survey project working at black bass tournaments. So we may roll that project out a little quicker than we do the buffalo project, but that's the plan.
Seems like both of you are pretty involved currently, or going to be pretty involved there with different projects going on campus. What about any past work experience? Have either of you had summer gigs with Arkansas Game and Fish? Or I know Arkansas has a lot of fish farms. Have either of you been able to do a summer job with any of those?
I haven't had that opportunity just yet, but me and Jacob both have been actively involved in our school club, the Fisheries and Wildlife Society here at Arkansas Tech University, where we do all kinds of volunteer work with the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, as well as several other agencies as well. I found that to be a really good way to meet new people and make new connections.
I haven't worked with either the AGFC or any of the fish farms, but I did my freshman year. I was a technician for a grad student on a flathead catfish project that we were attempting to do the acoustic telemetry similar to what project that I'm going to be working on. So we went out and sampled flathead catfish pretty much every day that summer. The project never really got implemented. There was some roadblocks that we ran into, but.
So I guess we mentioned already that both of you are going to be in your senior year on campus. What's next after graduating? Are you looking to go to grad school or go straight into the job field, or what's next for Jacob and Dawson?
Well, my plan is to hopefully get into a grad school. I'd like to get my master's and then eventually get my PhD. So that's my next steps.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would like to go the grad school route myself and go into a field very similar, if not the same, as what I'm doing now in my undergrad.
And so I guess, do either of you have an idea of what you might be looking for in a grad school experience? Is there a certain species or type of fish that you'd want to work on or a type of field work that you'd want to be involved in? I know, Jacob, you mentioned that you're kind of interested in the human dimensions class you're going to be taking. And would that be a project type that you'd be interested in doing a whole master's on?
Yeah, for sure. Actually, I was talking to Dr. Colvin about that this week. And Vic DiCenzo, I think it would be Dr. Vic DiCenzo. He just took over a position at AGFC over black bass, and he came and spoke to us this year about human dimensions because I believe that's what his master's is in. I may be wrong with that, but he spoke to us on that, and ever since then, that's pretty much the route that I would like to go.
Yeah, definitely. And I think personally, I would like to keep working with fish, specifically freshwater fish of some kind. It's just something that I'm really passionate about. Specifically, a lot of the smaller species like we have been working with, like with darters and shiners, I've definitely got a huge appreciation for fish like that just over the past year of studying them.
Well, and outside of school, you guys are both involved in a couple extracurriculars between the two of you. Jacob, you're part of the bass team there at Arkansas Tech. How did you get involved with competitive bass fishing?
So my best friend that I met here at college, he was on the team my freshman year. I kind of pre-fished some tournaments with him. I didn't really get involved with it. One thing led to another. Every time we would go out, I would have more and more tackle, more and more rods. And then I pre-fished for a championship with him. And by the time we went to the next tournament to pre-fish, I already had a boat of my own. So it kind of snowballed one thing to another, and I ended up full blown into it.
And you mentioned in the bio you sent me that you're ranked number 21. Is that kind of the Midwest college ranking, or is that nationwide collegiate bass fishing?
That's nationwide. They just put out the rankings, the preseason rankings, because our season ended and we're just now starting our new season, or about to. So in the preseason rankings, we're 21st in the nation. So we're going to be competing for school of the year this year. So hopefully we can get up there and actually compete.
And for those that might not be familiar, how does collegiate bass fishing work? Is it all individual or is it team-based? Is it regional or is it all nationwide?
So the rankings are nationwide. School of the year will be nationwide, but you only earn school of the year points for your division. There's three tournaments in each division. This year we had Lake of the Pines. We're going to have one here on Dardanelle in October. And then I don't remember where the other one was, somewhere in Texas. But you compete in a two-person format. Each school is allowed to bring as many two-person teams as they want. Until you get up into like the championships and you have to qualify for them. They normally take top 10% of each tournament will qualify for nationals or the championship for that series.
All right. And if you win the nationals, you automatically qualify for the Bassmaster Elite Series, correct?
You qualify to get into the qualifier for the Classic.
Yeah.
So it's like you qualify for another tournament that you have to qualify to get into the next one. So it's a bunch of qualifications.
Yeah, but there's a chance. There's a chance you can make it.
There is a chance.
And Dawson, I hear from your co-host that you are in a band and you do some weekend shows. What kind of music do you play?
Yeah, so I'm in a band. We're called NUCO, which is a abbreviation of Newton County, which is the place in Arkansas that I'm from, and everyone else in the band. So we started back early last year before the pandemic. Me and my brother, who have always played music our entire lives, got with this kid named Walker, who we just hit it off with right away, and we decided to form a band. And we play a little mixture of rock because it's what we originally learned how to play, and a little bit of country as well because it's kind of the cultural zeitgeist here in the South and throughout the Midwest. So it's very popular with the crowd, and we love it. We grew up with country music.
You don't go back to any Ozark bluegrass?
We do on occasion. Usually if we're just at a small gathering where we can play all acoustic, we definitely love playing stuff like that.
All right. And the bio that I read off is both of you are going to be tag teaming and co-hosting the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly spot each month. What got both of you interested in being part of the Fisheries Podcast?
So it started off with Sue telling us about it and how she was a host and everything. And for one of our assignments on our fisheries techniques class, she actually had us listen to one of the podcasts on electrofishing. And ever since then, I've been listening to them fairly regularly. I also had the opportunity to co-host an episode with Sue once, and I thought that was really fun. As for Jacob has been a massive fan for a while now. He's a super fan of the podcast, and he really liked the idea of hosting an episode sometime. And he reached out to me about it, and I was down to do it, and he was definitely down to do it. So Jacob just decided to get into contact with you guys about it, and y'all were on board for it. So now here we are today.
I guess what are you both most looking forward to with hosting? Do you have any guests in mind that you're really looking forward to interviewing?
I know we have a new professor that's starting here at Tech. His name, Kyler Heckey, I think that's how you pronounce his name. And that would be one of my first interviews. I'd like to get to know a little more about him. This will be his first semester. I know he just graduated from the University of Tennessee, Knoxville.
All right. Well, Jacob and Dawson, the tough part of the interview is over, as we are now down to the final five questions. And this is a group of five questions that I ask each of the guests that come on the show. And here in a few weeks, you will turn around and ask your guests these same five questions. And we always start real simple with, what is your favorite fish?
My favorite fish changes every week. It just depends on which fish I'm reading on at any given time. I've always found cave fish to be very interesting. The fact that they have like no pigment because they don't need it because they live in the dark and they don't have eyes. Also because they don't need it and they live in the dark. I always found that pretty fascinating. But I also love primitive fish as well. I've always loved primitive fish, like anything from paddlefish to sturgeon to gar. They just look so fascinating to me. And it's something that I've been really fascinated by my entire life.
So mine, you always say this is the easiest question. It's not the easiest question. I would have to say I'm a big fan of darters in general. So I'm going to go with the orange throat darter just because we sampled quite a few of them this year, and in their breeding colors, they're just amazing. So
yeah, the orange throat darter is definitely one of the prettiest fish I have ever seen, especially like for a freshwater fish. Those orange throat darters and breeding colors are just beautiful, especially you find like the more blue varieties. There are actually a few subspecies of orange throat darters, and one of them in particular has a lot of blue coloring all over it. It's called the blue belly form, and it is an absolutely amazing looking fish.
Both of you are just getting started or relatively early in your careers, but what is your favorite memory from your career so far?
I would say my favorite memory was from Dr. Charles Gagan's ichthyology class. It was, I believe, February, and we were going to sample a mountain stream, and he told us, he said, we're going to be pulling seines. Waders kind of get in the way. It's a little harder to walk, but if you want waders, it's going to be cold. Go ahead and wear them. So he talked us all out of not wearing waders. And then when we show up, he's in waders, and none of us brought waders. And it starts sleeting on us, and it was like 33 degrees, and we were in the water, chest-deep water at some points. It was a miserable day, but it was one of the most fun days I've had.
I would say for me, it's pretty similar. I would say ichthyology. Like I said before, that was the best class that I've taken in college in general. All of the field days that we had with that class where we were seining with beach seines and boat shocking and stuff like that, catching all these specimens that up until that point I didn't even know existed, and learning about them and getting an appreciation for them, all the while I'm making friends and connections that I'll probably remember for the rest of my life, was definitely an amazing experience for me.
You know, I already kind of asked both of you what would be your ideal graduate school position, but what is your dream job or dream location you're hoping to end up in after it's all said and done?
I would say my dream job would probably be implementing surveys to anglers and maybe possibly traveling around with one of the big bass tournament trails, such as Bassmasters or Major League Fishing now, and doing surveys for each lake, seeing what is happening at each of those lakes from year to year, because a lot of times they go to the same lakes year after year. So to see what changed and the conditions and everything, that would be my dream job, and I'm honestly not even sure if it exists. So
I would like to work with a particular species. I'm not exactly sure which one yet, but I think it'd be really cool to specialize in one species in particular and know everything there is to know about that species and know more about that species than 99.999% of people on Earth know about that. I just think that would be a really cool thing to do.
All right. And if money was not an issue, what is one project that you would like to work on?
So with the little bit of a background I have in field work was working on that flathead catfish project. I think that a project that really needs to be addressed and may be being addressed is with flathead catfish specifically, the consumer harvest of them, or the commercial harvest is the word I was looking for. There's no restrictions on them here. Like, you buy a license, and a couple of years ago, they raised the price of the license to try to combat it, but it wasn't enough. So a long-term project to determine the effects of the commercial harvest on flathead catfish specifically, I think that would be a major project, especially in this area.
Yeah, I think the dream job would probably be the dream project as well, just focusing on one specific species, whatever that may be, whatever I'm feeling at the time, I guess, and just basically making a lifelong project out of it, or like several projects based on that one species, I think would be ideal for me.
And finally, if there is one point or one principle that you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
So I had to think about this one earlier, and I think it's going to be that taking bass from a system is not a bad thing. All the tournament anglers think, oh, you're taking the bass out. That's a bad thing. It's not a bad thing. We have lakes here now that we're trying to get rid of spotted bass in, not completely, but to limit their numbers because they are overtaking the area, and we're raising limits for spotted bass because there's too many of them. So I would say that taking bass is not a bad thing.
So when I was in ichthyology, there was this phrase that our professor would repeat throughout the entire semester. And that phrase was calibrate your eye. As ich students, it's easy to get frustrated as beginners just getting started with fish identification because there are several nuances that you must recognize in order to differentiate two species from one another. We would often have to resort to a dichotomous key in our state fishes book because we were completely unfamiliar with many species that we were tasked with learning. But the essence of that phrase, calibrate your eye, at least for me, meant that sometimes there's just no straightforward answer to how to ID a fish, especially when differentiating between fish within the same genus, for example. Sometimes it just takes experience to start recognizing those subtle nuances. And there's no real easier way around it. You just have to take your time to calibrate your eye to those very subtle differences. So in short, there's just some things that you can only learn from experience that you can't really learn from a book or a quick YouTube tutorial or anything like that.
Well, Jacob and Dawson, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It was a pleasure hearing about you and all of your work you got going on there at Arkansas Tech and your future with the Fisheries Podcast. If people want to find out more information or get a hold of both of you, what would be the best way to do that?
Probably our emails. We can just put them in the show notes, I guess.
Yep, we can do that. And if you would like to get a hold of me, you can find me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at FisheriesPod, or old-fashioned email, feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. I hope that you enjoyed this episode. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast logo shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I am Nick Kramer, and thank you for listening to the 130th episode of the Fisheries Podcast. And remember, bass harvest is not a bad thing, and calibrate your eye.
I honestly don't know of any white bass tournaments. Yeah, all of them are black bass tournaments. I can't say that I've ever heard of a white bass tournament.
Did I mishear you? I thought you said white bass tournaments.
I meant black bass tournament if I said white bass. I'm sorry.
That makes more sense then.
That would be interesting, yeah. Though. That could be something to look into. We actually have a species in the Arkansas River system called the white perch. I don't know if you've heard of it before, but it's actually really rare in Arkansas. I think, to my knowledge, the last time it was caught in Arkansas was back in 2018. And a lot of people, if they ever catch one, they might not think anything of it because it looks a whole lot like a white bass, but it doesn't have any stripes on it. So if you're fishing in Arkansas and you catch one of these, they're super rare. So if you see one, just know you got something special. And it's called the white perch, but it's actually not a perch at all. It's a temperate bass, just like white bass and striped bass. So I'm not exactly sure why they call it the white perch.